YALC, yet another limerick collection for January. By Ghost of Nuggets Past. Summary. It's January! Chris called me sweetie, gave us prompts. There are limericks to write! Pumps fist. Yes! This one first starts out with a terrible pun, which is the best way to begin a limerick collection. For Chris Called Me Sweetie, Hello Lirials, and Friday 411. Chapter 1. Sentimental. Summary. Less fluff, more angst. Okay. Let's go do some Creepin' Man-style rhymin'. Creepy. Sherlock and John find out why a pair of siblings, girl and guy, keep a piece of fine land with a dark mansion and sentimental patient there to die. Sentimental. Sent-a-mental. I shouldn't be let out in society. Chapter 2. Hiccups. All right, it looks like we've gone blue right out of the gate. Woohoo! CCMS wrote that Sherlock got hiccups when giving head. So, problem solver. When Sherl hiccups, John can't stay hard. He's worried about getting scarred. I mean, wouldn't you? He thinks what to do. Behold, Sherlock's bespoke mouth guard. Is it tailored? For some unfathomable reason, I'm seeing it in plaid, or maybe the British flag? At any rate, I'm sure it's a comfortable accommodation for both of them and John's enormous danger kink. Of course, they'll find a better solution at some point, I'm sure. Chapter 3. I read Sherlock Holmes live recently, so the prompt 3 got me thinking about that. Relationship variety packs. In readings of Sherlock Holmes live, one should be prepared to arrive with a mind open wide, taking all love in stride. 1, 2, 3 or more, they all thrive. If you haven't yet read Sherlock Holmes Live by Emily Kerr, that's Keir Green Eyes on Tumblr, get settled and enjoy. It's long, but you can break it up into chunks easily if you don't have a generous stretch of time at hand. Interesting plot, great emotional hooks, surprises, layers, all that. Probably the nicest, most natural depiction of polyamory and other relationship styles I've seen so far in fic. Chapter 4. Hat. In some iterations, the deerstalker is beloved. In some, it is reviled. Oh, look! This verse is from the latter. The deerstalker. The hat! Oh, that hat of renown! They talk of it all over town. Got flaps for its ears? Of all of its peers, it's this one that Sherlock puts down. Chapter 5. Scarf. Hey, howdy, it's time for a scarf limerick. John's good at tying knots. The scarf. That scarf. The dark blue one with Sherlock's sweat and skin cells and hair product and scent. John loves that scarf, would be buried with it given the chance. He holds it to his face and inhales deeply as he stands at ease in the hallway. The flat is quiet. The doors are secured. He briefly wonders if someone smarter than him could clone Sherlock from one of these cells or a hair left in the weave of it. Shakes his head. No, two of that man-man would be too much for even him. He'd need more scarves, for one. He opens the bedroom door. Sherlock looks up and smiles. Your scarf. Do you know what your scarf does to me? It's part of your costume, you see. On neck, you're on fire. On wrists, you're much shyer. I'll be what you need me to be. Well, that got more romantic than expected. Chapter 6. Sense. What's better than poking holes in yourself and injecting poisons? Greg approved high. To Sherlock, all things must make sense, eventually, if one's not dense. Logic reveals, emotion conceals, but the rush of a solve is intense. Whether the rest of the art approves is debatable. The stats are impressive, but is it worth the humiliation? Greg nods his head vigorously. Yes. Yes, it is. Chapter 7. Nonsense. Mycroft, regardless of your status, John will hurt you. Back off. John had just gotten Sherlock back after 2 years of knowing he was dead. Just thinking about that situation made him see red, everything about it. It's only been 2 months, Mycroft. You can't actually believe I'm going to let you take him away again now. Look what happened the last time you soiled fucks decided to do deep ops together. What could be so important that you need only Sherlock for this? Mycroft, standing casually by the fireplace in 221B, looked his usual constipatedly pleasant way at John. Sherlock lay on the couch, reading a newspaper, and seemingly ignoring them both for the moment. John could tell by the tension in his fingers on the paper that he was unwilling to go along with Mycroft's plan, which was not unusual. What was unusual was that he was letting John fight for him. He was different now, less sure of himself. John was stepping up. No, no way. We can help you in whatever way you need here, but you can't take Sherlock away again. That's just asking too much, fumed the John-shaped granite. Mycroft sighed. It's really not such a big deal, Dr. Watson. Sherlock has a specialty in the area we need. The danger will be minimal for his skill level. He likely will be bored. Sherlock scoffed quietly from behind the world news section. No doubt. John doubled down. Unless Sherlock says an absolute yes, you'll have to go through me to get to him. He clenched his fists and stood his ground. Operation over my dead body. Nonsense, said Mycroft. No strops. You'll be back in a day or two tops. John narrows his eyes. He resents those guys who try to take Sherlock on ops. Sherlock's the wild card here. I wonder how it would play out. Someone is leaving this standoff unhappy. Chapter 8. Secret. There are many secrets in the world of Sherlock. One of them is in Lestrade's desk at work. It's a stressful job, and usually he thrives on it. The benefits outweigh the detriment, or why else would he do it? He eats stress down with his more tender emotions for breakfast and vomits them back up when he's got time to deal with them. Emotional bulimia. Tonight he's retched up his feelings once again. Not literally, you know. He just feels the horror finally sinking in. It's the vulnerable ones that get him the most. It doesn't make sense why that is. Nobody deserves to die like that. But somehow, if the victim is strong and fit, a base piece of the brain thinks they at least had a fighting chance. Most predators don't go for the strong and fit, though. They go for the elderly, the young, the sick. Greg shakes his head. He calls Donovan to his office, and they meet eyes for a moment before sitting down on either side of the desk. Greg brings out the elements for this ritual and sets them on the desk. Brain bleach, neat. When cases bring nightmares unbidden, Greg reaches for courage well hidden, deep back in a drawer, the bottle, the pour, the evil men do, overridden. What's unsaid is that the company is more important than the whiskey. Maybe later he'll call John and go to the pub to watch the game. That should help. Chapter 9. Truth. How do you find the truth? What even is it? The main players touch on these philosophical questions regarding the fall in this limerick triptych. Greg knows that when you're talking about an event, there's your side, their side, and what actually happened. Sometimes you just never exactly know, though, do you? Take that whole fiasco with Sherlock pretending to be dead, jumping off St. Bart's in front of everyone. He came back last week like, la-di-da, everything's normal now. He's absolutely sure there's a reason, more than one even, but he hasn't heard a compelling argument yet. Maybe Mycroft has answers, but that man's a concrete wall. He wonders if he likes chocolate and hard liquor. Interrogations don't have to be unpleasant. John sighed. The truth is that Sherlock's not dead. The truth is his brain's in his head. The truth, John thinks now, is no matter how, he didn't trust me when he fled. Sherlock sighed. The truth is John meant more to me than keeping my life worry-free. I bled and I fought, I killed and I thought, when I came back we'd hug gratefully. The truth. The truth is one can't assign blame to one man. There's a few sharing shame. But 'twas Moriarty who deserves to be reviled for rigging the game. You really can't argue with that. Chapter 10. 10. John tries so hard not to do the this little piggy game with Sherlock because it really does ruin the mood, but they're just so damn cute. Finally! 10 was the number of toes in his bed when Sherlock first rose. But things have gone great with John as of late. There's 20 now there in repose. Aww. Chapter 11. Pause. Sherlock puts the clues together. He's going to need a better washing machine. Maybe some freeze-dried liver snacks. Sherlock gets a pup? Sherlock was nervous because he saw the footprints were from Pause. Found John on his bed, amongst fur that he shed. Also, no clothes and red jaws. I mean, he always did get along with dogs.
Sherlock, I'm a werewolf, not a weredog. Yes, yes, same difference. I'll show you difference. Grrr.
Chapter 12. Big. Summary. So there's this movie about a little boy and a man who switch places and there's heart and soul played on a floor piano. Huh? No? Oh, right. Okay. Let's talk about John's penis. There are so many big things in the Sherlock stories. Big events, big webs of criminals, big brains, big egos, big strops, big muscles, big black cars, big tragedies, big mistakes, big gaps in time. Well, in this fandom, we stand John's business being big, too. Anyway, in honor of today's prompt, here's a nice meta-limerick for you. Summoning the Johnaconda. When John Locke fic writers think big, they'll roll in the dirt like a pig. They often indulge. John's generous bulge gives Sherlock a reason to jig. Chapter 13. Lift. Summary. I've been learning about the care of curls these last few years. No wonder Sherlock spends so long in the bathroom. Product preferences. The hair, it's the hair, John would sift through his fingers. That head is a gift. John likes it left loose, but Sherlock likes mousse in his curls when he thinks they need lift. Lift and separate. Product is a hair bra. Chapter 14. Sociopath. Summary. Sherlock's not actually a sociopath, as we've been shown time and time again in the various series. However, it's a useful mask for him. Where did he get the idea? Not all sociopaths are brilliant masterminds. Most are pretty normal, or even below average in intelligence. Like this guy that Sherlock thought might be interesting for his neurodivergence. Instead, he was a bore, only interested in getting the upper hand in every situation. Thought he was so clever, but truly was an idiot. They'd ended with a row. Bad date.
I dated a sociopath, said Sherlock. It ended in wrath. He'd sat in the sauna and smoked marijuana and left me alone in the bath.
Sherlock felt like he had wasted an evening, but at least he learned something. If you want to warn people away, calling yourself a sociopath is shorthand for, I'm rude, arrogant, and always right. We are not friends. Back off. He usually worked. Something was different about this guy, John, though. Head tilt. What's his deal? Chapter 15. Bored. Summary. A bored Sherlock is a dangerous Sherlock. John has been well trained for emergency situations, and he tries to have a plan in his back pocket for defusing his partner. It's much longer than this. To-do list. John often helps Sherlock when bored to avoid doing something untoward. Guns locked in their place. Call Greg for a case. Roleplay he's a pirate with sword.
Ahoy, lad! Prepare to be boarded!
Maybe I'll add some verses someday. Feel free to submit some in the comments if you like. Chapter 16. Wild. Those enigmatic, dangerous men came from somewhere. A crust of propriety. As kids, John and Sherlock were wild, both racking up sins chaos piled. They'd brought home neat frogs and tore up dead logs, were rarely polite, meek, or mild. Over time, they produced a veneer of manners they often appear to be unassuming when underneath fuming or ready to shift up a gear. Still separate, each has become a skilled man. No, neither is dumb. And once they meet, their powers defeat their foes once they find they have some. Still under it all, there's still them, the kids that spread wild bedlam. They catch their bad guys, catch each other's eyes, then run home for private mayhem. Isn't it crazy to think that every single person ever was once a baby? Blows my mind every time I think about it. Chapter 17. Case. Summary. From non-emotional to real boy, what a journey! Better together. There once was a man on a case who had total control of his face until he met John. Then a grin was upon the face of the man on the chase. Chapter 18. Murder. Just a little case file. Another quickie here. Foul play in the countryside. There once was a Lebanese herder who sadly reported a murder. Our men set out strong and learned before long that the murder was done by a birder. Watch out for those ornithologists. Chapter 19. Home. Summary. It's not nature preserve in here, Sherlock. Drafty dressing gown. Home is a place you can rest, a place you can look not your best. John reassures, his bad hindbrain purrs. Wear trousers, though, when we've a guest. Otherwise, you know, you're fine. Although, aren't you cold? Chapter 20. Affection. Summary. Sherlock realizes some things he thought were true were not. When you put the starving and lonely street cat into the warm home with food and care, it takes a period of adjustment. Sure, the cat was hard enough to survive and thrive in the rough environment, but it doesn't have to do that anymore. Rest. In John's lap. Oops, I broke my analogy. Realization. Affection, said Sherlock, is weird, but not quite as bad as I feared. It's draining, that's true, but I'm refilled too. Perhaps I was too coldly reared. Looking back through the eyes of an adult, opened by the love of his John, can be a harrowing experience. So much he would have missed out on if he'd followed Mycroft's advice, if he'd continued walking in his parents' footsteps. He would have lost half the spectrum of life using that cracked prism and never seen the full rainbow on the other side. What a waste not to experience it all, really. Chapter 21. Candle. Summary. Not every crime is clever. Sherlock's found something on a table in the empty house. It's a book! It's been practically shredded, but he can just make out the title that leads him to the next clue. Oh, but there's also a sheet of paper next to it looking suspiciously blank. The dim light isn't helping.
Anticlimactic. Hey, John, can you hand me that candle? There's something here left by the vandal. Some scratches, I think.
Invisible ink.
It says, you are dumb-looking and dull. Clearly the vandal is with a 10-year-old who just learned about lemon juice ink. Don't take it personally, Sherlock. John pats him on the shoulder.
Chapter 22. Song. A tender side of the complicated man known as John Watson. 7 p.m., dark outside. Upstairs in a cool bedroom, a stocky male figure rocks in a chair. He is holding a very young baby on his chest, who is gently grasping the buttons on his shirt over and over. Her movements are slowing, and his rocking is steady, just like him. Soon she will start drooling a little, and he will quiet down to think for a while. Rosie's Lullaby. The song of the pigeon is coo. The song of the train is choo-choo. I think that your song is not very long. You'll sleep before a cow sings her moo.
I think John would be a great dad. He'd sing his girl to sleep on his chest sometimes, and the warmth would soothe them both. That baby head smell and the quiet would be a balm for his healing heart.
Chapter 23. Bed. Summary. Our favorite trope raises its sleepy head and grabs John like a big body pillow between snores. Subtle? Not so much. One bed in the room Sherlock booked. John wonders just how hard he looked. It feels contrived, but since they arrived, he is like a fish happily hooked.
There was nothing to be done about it, John. I'll just stay up all night. Like hell you will, Sherlock. Get ready for bed. Get in here. We'll be fine.
Sherlock's inner self rubs hands and cackles gleefully.
Chapter 24. Midnight.
Oh, we've got extra poetic for this one, folks. I kind of want to do a series of midnight verses. They do a lot of things at night, depending on the case and the story. I can think of 5 scenarios just off the bat.
Yes.
First time. Yes, midnight steals pieces of day, keeps seconds tucked safely away. It floats the time mist on new lovers' blissed, this moment drawn long as they lay.
Chapter 25. Fire.
Summary. So many ways to deal with fire in this context. What to choose? The fire of passion? The fire of guns? The bonfire?
Nope.
John.
For a man as brilliant as Sherlock, he does make my laboratory safety danger senses tingle. Hair back, goggles on, safety coat or apron, cotton clothing separate by hazards from food areas. Masks. Oh, and how about not doing it in our kitchen? Human blood work itself is BSL-2. Kid out, 221, with a fume hood, benches, good lighting, sink, eyewash station, emergency shower, fire extinguishers, pest control, autoclave, centrifuge, freezer, and fridge. Work that trust fund, baby. Make me hot with your adequate PPE, Sherls.
Toxic lunch.
Hey, Sherlock, you know I'm your man. I'll back you on most every plan, but I draw the line at thinking it's fine with burning sulfur in our pan.
No poisonous gases in the kitchen, Sherlock. Bad boy. Bad.
How bad?
I'm thinking. Hang on.
Chapter 26. Pants.
Summary. If you call pants trousers in the U.S., we will think you are 80 years old.
Barrier.
Pants in the States are on top applied. In England, they beneath the trousers hide. No matter how worn, John has cause to mourn that Sherlock must cover his hot backside.
Red.
On Monday, John wears his red pants. He's tempted to show off and dance. He'll make Sherlock stare and follow him where, A dance with no pants is romance. Chapter 27, Chemistry. Summary, a small scene involving Sherlock's butt.
Narrator, a la John Cleese. Two men, John and Sherlock, on a picnic. They are under a tree on a fine day. Light breeze stream nearby, wildflowers in bloom. Bees to provide study and delighted fascination to the scientist. Sherlock's body to provide study and delighted fascination to the doctor. But, wait, oh dear. Are these two gentlemen really planning to... Really? In the park? In the middle of the afternoon? Sherlock on hands and knees, John pulling down his trousers. This is so unlike our fine duo. Where is the propriety? Have they been drugged? What is their sense of decency? Won't someone think of the children? Oh. Ah, never mind. Stand down.
Well-rounded education. So I got B's in chemistry class. Anatomy? None could surpass. I've studied your rear. I'm certain, my dear, you've got a bee sting on your ass.
Just a medical consultation. Woof, lads. Almost slipped into a different rating there.
Chapter 28, Body. Summary, poor John with his deep self-deprecation. Self-sabotage. John wants Sherlock's body, it's true. His feet feel stuck deep in thick glue. Thinks will he or won't he, and how could he want me? He'd die if he found Sherlock knew.
John, love, sweetheart, darling, idiot, tell the man.
Chapter 29, Gay. Summary, happy John Locke Day. Here's a gay limerick for you. This one has a bit of a tongue twister, which incidentally is also the name of one of John's signature moves. Beautiful, aren't they? John and Sherlock are in love. With grins they replay the night of their viewing of stars while walking twixt bars, the gay gaze gaze gaily above. Oh, cool. I just realized it put X, Y, and Z within six words of each other.
Chapter 30. Perfect. Can't get Ed Sheeran song out of head. So I wrote a completely non-romantic verse for perfect. Take that, satisfying chord changes.
Sherlock writes his own rules when your rules just objectively suck.
Wall stabbed. No one is perfect, it's true. Admit it, you've cheated all through.
John, don't be a prat. I cannot help that. I'm better at Cluedo than you.
Stab.
Chapter 31. Together. So here we all are at the end of our John Locke January journey. I've jumped all over their timeline and across alternative universes to entertain you. And here is my final offering, comfortable, sleepy, together.
And beyond?
The story won't end when they wed. Yes, they've legitimized their shared bed. Now each passing day, they're happy that they have each other's backs till they're dead.
A quiet, breathless moment in bed after their 73rd brilliant shag, with no signs of becoming bored yet.
They stare fuzzily at the poster Sherlock has attached to the ceiling so it would stop being, quote, so white all the time, unquote. The bees, music, chemical equations, and sports stats, for John, stare back benevolently. Afternoon London noises muted in the background.
You know, Sherlock, there is an afterlife. I'm chasing you down and absorbing your ectoplasm or whatever.
That's ridiculous. So we'd be joined at the molecular level for eternity?
Maybe through a bunch of reincarnations, too. You never know.
Utterly ridiculous. But I'll allow that if there is an afterlife, which I don't think there is, but lay that aside, if there is one, I'd gladly spend it mixed with you.
Like one big John Locke-site, we can engulf Mrs. Hudson, too. She'll be our housekeeper forever, like our friends. We'll just eat them, like pack mongoose. Nom nom nom. And you think I'm the weird one?
John snores quietly. Sherlock smiles fondly. The end. You've been listening to YALC, Yet Another Limerick Collection for January, by Ghost of Nuggets Past.